taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans.
Helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution so that we can teach the rising generation to be free. And part of teaching the rising generation recognizes the need to actually teach the rising generation. You know, it's amazing to me, as I've learned over the years, that 90% of the students in this country go to a public school, a government school. And the government schools are not teaching our children to be free. No, they're teaching them to be subjects and slaves. And it reminded me of a quote I heard many years ago from a little gentleman by the name of Vladimir Lenin. At least it's attributed to him. It says, "Give me 4 years to teach the children, and the seed I have sown will never be uprooted." Now think about that. 90% of America's children are sent to a government-run school, a government-operated school, and their seeds are planted. And what seeds are being planted? I contend that the seeds that are planted are that of subjugation, tyranny, a general understanding that the people are to submit to their government, that we are subjects and slaves rather than free citizens, that the people are there to serve the government, not the government to serve the people. And if there's one thing that has been standing out more and more lately, it is this idea. Now, I don't know if everybody recognizes it, but I see more and more this idea that government expects the people to serve them. And more, I see the American people who believe it is their duty to serve the government. So I want to look at some examples of this today. And I'm going to start with an organization called the National Organization of Public School Boards. And what they're doing is they are calling on the Biden administration to protect it. From who? From the parents. So the National School Board Association, which, by the way, represents 90,000 school board members across the U.S., wrote a letter to Joe Biden requesting that the federal government deal with the growing number of threats of violence and acts of intimidation occurring across the nation, characterizing these protests as domestic terrorism. Now, I don't know about you, but I would imagine if there were actual examples of domestic terrorism at school boards, I'd imagine it had been reported on, wouldn't it? Instead, I've seen a lot of reports of upset parents challenging the actions of these school boards, demanding that they serve the communities they are supposed to serve, that they not teach their children to be racist. And I've seen a lot of evidence of school boards ignoring the concerns of these parents, enforcing mask mandates without evidence of their effectiveness, calling for vaccine mandates, some even going so far as, I believe, threatening to vaccinate the children without the parents' permission. So I'm wondering, who's acting more and more like a terrorist? Now, I'm not talking about all school boards. My belief is that the majority of school boards and the majority of the members on those school boards, that they're honest people. They honestly want what is best. They are trying to do a job they were elected to do. Maybe they don't have the best information. Maybe they have conflicting information. But I believe the vast majority are interested in what the parents have to say and have the similar concerns to the parents. But there are examples recorded on video of school boards treating parents as a nuisance, limiting their time to speak. I interviewed, was it last week, a gentleman who went to the school board to deal with mandates, mask and vaccine mandates, where there were limited access, there was limited opportunities for the actual taxpayer, the people that fund the school board, there was limited access for them to comment to the school board. Does that sound like domestic terrorists to you? But you see, this is the example. This is the hyperbole effect. You'll take a challenge, even a challenge to the right operation of the school board, and if you can make it seem like a threat of violence, that it's inciting chaos when parents stand up to school boards that are, in some cases, out of control, violating the law, violating the Constitution, violating the parents' rights, indoctrinating their children to be racists. That's the example, you know. Oh, we can just call it chaos and domestic terrorism, and then we'll get the federal government to use the levers of power that it was, in many cases, illegally assumed to go ahead and quell opposition to what the school board is doing. In the letter, the NSBA requests that such review, that such being the federal government, review, examine appropriate enforceable actions against these crimes and acts of violence under the Gun-Free School Zone Act, the Patriot Act in regards to domestic terrorism, the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Hate Crimes Act, the Violent Interference with Federally Protected Rights Statute, the Conspiracy Against Rights Statute, an executive order to enforce all applicable federal laws for the protection of students and public school district personnel. Now, what I find interesting is they claim that there are crimes and acts of violence. Where's the evidence? If there's a crime, tell me, why isn't the local police handling it or the local sheriff? Why do they have to go to the federal government? Could it possibly be that the NSBA is simply looking to bypass local law enforcement because local law enforcement can see what's actually going on? But the assuming that the feds may not. Now, again, if there's a crime, if someone is threatened, if violence is threatened or committed, that is a crime. That is not a federal crime. That is a state or local crime and needs to be dealt with on a state or local level. But you see, that's not what the NSBA wants. They want the federal government to run everything. Why do you suppose the NSBA wants the feds to deal with a problem that doesn't seem to be a problem to me yet? Now, I'm not saying there aren't instances. The question is it actually, you know, if there are crimes, where are the crimes? Show me where the crimes were committed, charges were filed, and nothing happened. Or crimes were committed and charges were never filed. Show me. See, this gets back into this indoctrination of, if we don't like the way things are going, let's get the federal bullies to come in and intimidate people so that we get what we want. I'm not saying there aren't instances of crimes. I'm not saying there aren't instances of threats of violence. I'm asking the NSBA to put up. Because if all it takes is an accusation, well, hey, how about we just accuse every school board member of indoctrinating our children and thereby consider it child abuse and have them arrested? Then we can go get the Federal Department of Education to arrest all the school board members for child abuse, at least all the ones that support critical race theory. We have to be smarter about this. This is why it's important that we read and study. Now, what's interesting is the NSBA letter has gotten some pushback. 23 different organizations representing 427,000 members wrote a response to the letter sent to President Biden. And the letter notes that the NSBA was citing a minor number of incidents in its request with parents who are criticizing and protesting against the decisions the school boards are engaged in or may be engaged in, and referring to that as domestic terrorism and hate crimes. This is what happens when disagreement is considered violence. Another thing that our children have been taught. So the question then becomes, okay, we've got a he said, she said. Who do you listen to? As I said, I'm not saying there are not examples, but those need to be dealt with individually. If we get the federal government to fix every little problem in every little school district, we no longer have a United States of America. We have a tyranny of America. We have the federal government running everything. James Madison warned us about this when he was talking about the general welfare clause, what happens when the federal government gets involved in things it is not legally authorized to. They may get involved in, among other things, education. And what happens then? Because more and more we see the federal government trying to take over everything, including education. In many ways, it started with federal grants and then the federal government taking over the student loan program. The Department of Education now getting more and more involved into the primary and secondary schools. And in an interview, in a congressional hearing, U.S. Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona refused to say that parents are the primary stakeholders in a child's education. He was asked by Senator Mike Braun, do you think parents should be in charge of their child's education as the primary stakeholder? Cardona's reply was, I believe parents are important stakeholders, but I also believe educators have a role in determining educational programming. Braun came back and said, I think that's going a little bit out of focus. What I think you're going to find across all elements of education, since they pay the bills, they raise the kids, they probably need to be the primary spokesman for the kids' good education. This went back and forth for a while. But understand what this means. It means in the federal government, the Secretary of Education, which, by the way, is an illegal position. Right? The Constitution of the United States does not authorize the United States to get involved in education. Period. End of story. So Miguel Cardona is holding an illegal office, committing crimes by depriving the rights protected by the Constitution of the citizens of the United States to control their government. But he believes that you, as a parent, aren't in charge of your child's education. You're a stakeholder. You're one of many. You're one of a bundle of sticks that's involved in the education. Yeah, I use that term for a reason, because that's where the term fascisti comes from, where we use the term fascist. The idea that government is in charge of everything, that you're not an individual, and they don't believe you have the right to control your child's education. You get to birth them, you get to raise them, you get to pay the bills, but they want educators to be in charge of what they learn. And it was very interesting. Many years ago, I was working on a project. I was in North Carolina at the time. It was an international project. We had people from around the world, and we would go out to lunch, and we'd have these interesting discussions. And one day, we were asked about each other's family. Somebody asked me about my daughter and asked her what grade she was in. I said, well, she's kind of here and kind of there because we homeschool. Now, what was important is one of the people in this group was from Germany. And in Germany, homeschooling is illegal. It is actually a crime in Germany to teach your own children, to not send them to a government school or private school. So this person was aghast at the very idea that we would teach our daughter by ourselves, that we'd even think ourselves competent of teaching our daughter by ourselves. Which kind of reminds me of Miguel Cardona, reminds me of that. Aghast that someone other than a professionally indoctrinated educator, and I use that term purposefully, that only a professionally indoctrinated educator can be allowed to indoctrinate children. In fact, I remember we were always asked, this was a great question, they'd say, well, aren't you worried about socialization? And I kind of took a answer from a friend of mine and made it my own. I said, we're very concerned about socialization. That's why we don't send her to public schools. Public schools are the Lord of the Flies. The inmates are running the asylum. That's why she doesn't go there. Take a look at some of these public schools. Take a look. Either remember for yourself what it was like. The peer pressure, the bullies, the cliques. Is that what we want our children taught? Do we want our children to be taught to judge everything based on the color, everyone based on the color of their skin? Because that's what a professionally indoctrinated educator has been taught. There's a reason why I focus on educating children. I spend as much time as possible. I work with a lot of homeschool groups. You know why I work with homeschool groups? Because most public school groups won't touch me. I've been trying to get in my local public school for 3 years. I have offered to do a voluntary, absolutely free constitution session. What do they want? They want me to do one class. I want to do an assembly. What do they want? I will work with them to put something together, and I can't get them to return an email or a phone call. So homeschoolers, I go to homeschool conferences. I deal with homeschool events. I love it because they're at least open to the possibility. I also work with a lot of college groups. I love dealing. It can be a little harder because they've been indoctrinated, but if they're willing to have a fair conversation, these are wonderful opportunities. But you see, in the mind of Miguel Cardona, and I must assume the rest of the federal government, parents are only, well, an important stakeholder, but not the primary stakeholder. And now for those of you who send your children to public school, how do you feel about that? Now, if you've been following some of this, you have to have heard what's been going on in Loudoun, Virginia. This has been some of the most vocal and animated efforts of parents to prevent their children being indoctrinated with racism. It's become out of the Loudoun County, Virginia school district. There have been school board meetings, there are videos of school board meetings, protests, all sorts of work. And in the middle of all this, a middle school teacher has basically stated that she will incorporate the contents of critical race theory, the ideas of critical race theory, which basically defines everybody by the color of their skin. Claims the United States is intrinsically and irredeemably racist. So she's going to put that in the classroom, despite the fact that the school district has assured the parents that educators would not teach such a divisive ideology. This middle school teacher says, I don't care what the parents want. I don't care what the school district wants. I'm going to teach this because I know better than everyone else. She literally said in the tweet, the best thing about the summer is that I can spend all my time planning how to incorporate critical race theory into my lessons. How do you feel now, parents? And ask yourself, how many of you are, ask yourself, are your students being indoctrinated with critical race theory and you don't even know it? Because this teacher also tweeted, the first rule of indoctrinating students is not to tell anyone that you are indoctrinating students. The second rule of indoctrinating students is not to tell anyone that you are indoctrinating students. See, government-run schools, how great, no matter what they were originally designed for, are now about indoctrinating your children. That's what the teachers have been told their role is. Their role is not simply to educate, but to indoctrinate. Not teach children how to think, but teach them what to think. And since they know that people don't like what is being taught, they have to hide it. It's the one silver lining of this COVID scaredemic is that with all the children at home being taught on Zoom, parents finally got to see what their children were being taught. And now some of them are starting to wake up. So if you live in Loudoun County, if you have children in that school district, are you going to the school board demand this teacher be at least suspended without pay? At least. I mean, personally, I think she should be fired. I know it's hard to fire a teacher, but come on. The school district said, we're not going to do it. She's telling you she is going to hide the fact that she's doing it. She's going to do it, and she's not going to tell people because she wants to indoctrinate your children. And she doesn't think you have the right to say no. That is why my daughter did not go to a public school. That is why the only time my daughter set foot in a public school was for standardized testing. It's also why my daughter graduated from high school a year early. She could have done it a year and a half, but she wanted to graduate with a friend of hers. It's why she scored in the 98th percentile in almost all of the state standardized testing. It's also why when they gave her one year, one of the standardized tests included geometry, which we hadn't taught her yet. It wasn't in our curriculum. We'd used a curriculum and geometry was next year. But we didn't know that they were going to test on geometry, so we didn't teach her geometry. So all she got at that point, I think, was like an 87. Yeah, on a subject she hadn't even studied yet. So what happens when we give our children 4 years into a social engineering project that's called the government-run schools? What happens? Those seeds are planted, and now those seeds were planted decades ago, and now they're coming home to roost. You see, the children that went to school in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, actually probably through the 70s and 80s, were taught by teachers who'd gone to school in the hippie 60s. With Marxism and Leninism and Maoism as writ. Those children are now the teachers of the teachers. They're now the professors teaching who have taught our current educators. And now our current educators are so steeped in these Marxist, centralized, socialist, government runs everything, that they think it's right for them to hide what they're doing because, well, they know better than everybody else. And the man running the illegal U.S. Department of Education thinks you have a part to play, but not the primary role, because you're just the parent. Whether you call it takes a village to raise an idiot, or just this idea that, you know, you need to be an expert. You need to be properly trained and indoctrinated before you can indoctrinate others. Regardless of that, what we're looking at is we are dealing with the result of decades of handing our little 5 and 6-year-olds over to government to brainwash. And then we wonder why they come out of these schools with these weird and wacky ideas. And now those ideas have become standardized, normalized. They're simply part of the system. What do you think is going to happen next? Well, I know next for me is I got to head off to break. But before I do that, I want to remind you to check out healthycell.com. You know, vitamins are important. The foods we eat today, they don't have the same minerals and vitamins that the ones my grandparents grew. So many of us take vitamins, and I don't know about you, but taking vitamin pills is not a lot of fun. Well, along comes HealthyCell. They've come up with an absorption technology that helps vitamins feed your bodies at the cellular level, not with a bunch of pills, but with a travel-ready gel pack. They're easy to use. They're tasty. You can take them by themselves or mix them with food or water or any drink. Get the vitamins your body needs. Help live a better life. Help yourself sleep, help your immune system, or if you're like me, you get to the end of the day and you kind of get that brain fog, right? Everything kind of slows down and you have a hard time concentrating. Well, try the focus and recall. It helps focus your mind, helps your brain clear up and work better, helps you be able to remember what you're working on. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order just for being an America Out Loud listener. Head to healthycell.com/outloud to get that 20% off your first order. Again, try Focus and Recall or any of their products. You'll find that they're an easier way to get the vitamins your body needs.
Well, my fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down? You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits are supporting these extremists. Companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx, it's an endless list. And they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. Here, continuing with the Constitution study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the American people to be free. We teach the rising generation to be free. And today, we're talking about the social experiment that our rising generation has been part of, that experiment in indoctrination and in subjugation. It's been going on for decades, and we're seeing the fruit of it. And here we have an example. The San Diego School District recently voted unanimously to require vaccines for all in-person staff and for eligible students. The San Diego Unified School District, this is a public school, says if you want to show up to school, you have to take an experimental vaccine. As long as the CDC or the FDA or the or whatever King Fauci has to say, says you need to take an experimental vaccine. We don't care what the parents say. If you want to show up, you need a vaccine. Now, vaccines in schools for students are an interesting dilemma. Not dilemma. They're an interesting thought process because there are several vaccines that are needed if you're going to go to a school. Now, these vaccines have been around for many, many, many years, unlike the COVID vaccines. They have a history of not only safely and effectively treating people, or inoculating people, but with a set of known side effects that are easily manageable. None of which is true for the COVID vaccine. Now, let me make a point. There is not a COVID vaccine available in the United States except under an emergency use authorization. I know you've been told left, right, and center that the Pfizer vaccine has been approved. That is not true. The last I saw, the Pfizer vaccine had its EUA extended. The BioNTech vaccine, which is apparently some deal with Pfizer, that has gotten a conditional approval, but they had to go through more testing for some serious side effects. And oh, by the way, the BioNTech vaccine is not available in the US. So they want to experiment on, now they want to experiment on the children. For a vaccine where evidence shows does not prevent you from getting COVID. So that's the other major difference. You talk about, you know, the was it mumps, rubella, whooping cough, all these other vaccines, polio, they prevent you from getting the disease, which they also prevent you from spreading the disease. Now, the problem is the COVID vaccines so far appear, I do say appear, to minimize the impact of the disease. I mean, I remember as a kid, you had the vaccination, you felt kind of icky for a day. But the idea was you got this so that you would not get the disease, a full-blown disease. But it also keeps you from spreading the disease. And the problem is they've done tests and they've compared the viral load in the nasal passages of vaccinated and unvaccinated. You know what they found? They found the same viral load, the same ability to transmit the disease regardless of whether you're vaccinated. So it doesn't prevent you from getting the disease. It does appear to minimize the symptoms, but it does not prevent you from spreading the disease. And there are still risks, significant risks. I forget which one. There was one of the vaccines, my doctor was telling me there was one of the vaccines, I want to say it was polio, but I may be wrong. They got pulled when 50 people died shortly after taking the vaccine. There have been over 12,000 people who have died shortly taken after these COVID vaccines. Yet it's still not only available, it is being pushed. And if you live in the San Diego Unified School District, once the federal government says it's okay for your kids, they have to take it or they can't go to school. Now, this is really funky because state law requires that students attend school. Now, in general, they say, you know, it has to be, I believe, generally an accredited school, right? Which is generally public schools. There are certain private schools, and there are probably some laws about homeschooling. I don't know California laws about homeschooling. So they say you must send your child to school, and now they're going to say you must vaccinate them to do so. Is anybody else disturbed by this? Again, a vaccine with a very short track record, a track record that includes serious, serious side effects, and a limited capability to actually stop the spread of the disease. Yet this is being pushed as if we're all going to die tomorrow of the bubonic plague if we don't get vaccinated. But why would they do that? I see this and it looks to me more like, well, more indoctrination. Shut up and do what you're told. The government says it's safe, it's safe. Evidence to the contrary, don't care. The government says it's safe. Not only is it safe, but you have to take it. Treating our children as if they are subjects of government. See, I even remember the other vaccines, there were religious exemptions. They were religious sects that we don't do any vaccines, period. Yet they're trying to get rid of religious exemptions, or at least not recognize religious exemptions for many of these. I don't know if that's the case in San Diego or not. But what am I seeing? I'm seeing government entities, school boards, that don't believe you are the primary stakeholder in your child's education, that don't believe that you have the authority to make the healthcare decisions for your children, that believe they know better than everybody else. And they are now not only forcing children to take these. Think about it. It's not simply a question of, you know, okay, take the vaccine. It's a question of, do what you're told by government, period. Either you do what you're told or you'll get in trouble. What is that teaching our students? What is that teaching our young people? People at an age where peer pressure is extremely powerful. What is that teaching them? Again, it's teaching them to be subjects of government, not its master. In another example of, well, state-sponsored intimidation, a former director at Montana State University has allegedly referred to a student as a stupid bleep and several other staffers berated the student for starting an anti-mask campaign on campus. At least according to emails that were obtained by the Daily Caller, the student, a Dylan Dean from Young Americans for Liberty, created a petition to end the university's mask mandate on campus. He garnered more than 1,100 petition signatures, at least according to the data provided. Now, the university orders students, faculty, and staff to wear masks indoors. The petition alleged the university waited until the last minute to implement the mandate, and students did not have the opportunity to make decisions about their schooling accordingly. So he started a petition. It's kind of a thing college students do. I mean, I remember when I was in college, petitions for everything. So he took this petition and he tried to send it to the president of MSU, who allegedly shut him out of his office. He had staffers and even a professor attack him over the petitions. He had the petition, and he has emails to show it. He sent the email to several staffers and didn't get a good reception. This student worked at the school's Alcohol and Drug Assistance Center, and he was sent an email to the dean that read, "You stupid bleep." He was also told, quote, "There was a time when conservatives were respectable and had intellectual arguments that made sense. Now being conservative seems to mean emotionally stunted, whiny little victims." Now here's what I find interesting. So here's a young man. He sees what he thinks is a problem. He gets up a petition to find other like-minded people that have an argument. He attempts to present this to the school administration, who berate him, use vulgar language, refer to him as emotionally stunted and whiny for actually using facts and data about the masks. Who's acting like a little whiny little child? It's actually the school staff and several of the professors that are actually acting like whiny little children. Because they have been taught, both through their primary education and their secondary education, that all you have to do is throw a hissy fit, a temper tantrum, like a two-year-old in a grocery store, and you will get what you want. The question is, will it work? Now, according to YAL spokesman, students at the university are infuriated. They feel like they've been cheated with a bait and switch, a promise of a normal school year, then imposing these tyrannical mandates once they've paid their tuition. And now they're being berated for trying to get their lives back. That the president can simply hide behind a locked door, silence, protesters, and hope that it'll all blow away. So we see this indoctrination, this brainwashing with, if you throw a temper tantrum, they won't challenge you, you'll get away with it. Well, now we're seeing it from the administration and faculty and some faculty at a state university. But here's the other question. What are you teaching the other students? Think of it. You're a student in MSU. Maybe you're against the mask mandate. Maybe not. Maybe you've got some issue that you want to raise. Maybe it's mask. Maybe it's something else. And what do you see? A simple petition. Not a riot. Not a demonstration. Not yelling and screaming and intimidation. A petition that is met with such an overreaction, the language, the abuse of both the staff and the faculty. What do you think a student's going to do? Do you think a student's going to raise a petition for something that they think is important that may go against what the school administration wants? Aren't they going to suppress the free speech? Isn't this a chilling effect on free speech of the students, protected, by the way, by the Montana Constitution? This is a state school, people. This is not a private school. What are we doing here? I, for one, have reached out to YAL. I've actually talked to other Young Americans for Liberty groups in the past, but we need to support these students because they're in the belly of an indoctrination center, and they've spent money, and in some cases, their parents have spent money to brainwash them into a certain way of acting, to do what you're told, to shut up and listen to the administration, or you'll be belittled, maligned, called names. Let's face it, if you have professors using that type of language about a student, do you really think the student's going to be fairly graded in class? I have no evidence, but I would not be surprised. I'd actually be surprised if a student in a class with any sort of subjective grading would not be impacted by standing up for what they believe. Let's forget about whether or not it's true. Let's forget about whether or not there are facts supporting the other side. These are people expressing an opinion, berated by government officials. But the university, a state university. So if you're in that area and you can support this group, do it. If you're not in that area, find out how you can support these students. It's important that they hear that what they're doing is right and just. That is the school administration that is behaving badly. They need to hear that. Because if all they hear is a derision, it will crush their souls. But if they hear from Americans that say, hey, we stand with you, what can we do to help? Then you can buoy them up under this time of trial. Because it's not just MSU, and it's not just faculty and staff. There's a video going around of a pair of students at the Arizona State University who were studying in the school's multicultural center. All right, multicultural. Let's allow other cultures. Let's get together and have a discussion. They were harassed. Over what? A sticker on a laptop that says, Police Lives Matter. Suddenly, Police Lives Matter. Someone just comes up to them. Hey, it's white supremacy. It's white nationalism. Let's just make up something and call a name. Where is the white supremacy? Does it say white Police Lives Matter? Nope. No. It simply said, hey, people matter. And they were harassed and forced out of a university space for having a sticker that notes that police lives matter. See, what so many people seem to forget is police are people too. They're mothers, they're fathers, they're sisters and brothers, they're sons and daughters, they're friends, they're neighbors. And the very idea that someone, for whatever reason, says, you know what, let's consider police lives as well, is not allowed to be shown in public in a multicultural center. So much for multicultural. Apparently, it's only multicultural as if you agree with the Marxist, woke, crazy, stupid Black Lives Matter crowd. Unless you are a fascist, multicultural doesn't apply. Yeah, I said it. They're fascists. They're not allowing an opposite point of view. Imagine going to a multicultural center and being driven out because people disagree with you. Being harassed into leaving because people disagree with you. Oh, but they're just college students. These college students are the product of last generation's college students, and they will be training the next generation as well. This will not remain on college campuses. Just as wokeism didn't remain on college campuses, just as CRT didn't remain on college campuses, this will not remain on college campuses. And if college campuses and educational institutions of all grades are teaching our children that the answer to disagreement is to yell and scream and harass and segregate. What happens when they become the ones in positions of power? It's not good, folks. It is not pretty. You end up with, over at Washington University. Washington University has created a black-only housing program in one of its dormitories. Now, I'm a bit older. I've been around a few years. But I do remember when people like, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X were very upset about segregation. In fact, they fought very hard to desegregate schools, to desegregate dormitories, to desegregate programs. Yet here we are, segregating again. And it's the same wacko leftist socialists that are segregating us that were telling us to desegregate 30 years ago. Now, if this was one of those, a voluntary segregation, meaning it was absolutely voluntary, there might be some legitimacy to it. All right. It's a voluntary association. I don't have a problem with it. However, in a webinar where the university was announcing the creation of these Black Affinity Housing program, a representative said the opportunity to live in a shared space with others who have a shared identity, specifically a marginalized identity. Oh, so this is a racist residency program. Yeah, because I know many Black people who haven't been marginalized. They've been quite successful. And I know a lot of white people who have been marginalized. But you see, no, this is a racist program. They went on to say in the webinar, residents in Black affinity-based housing are encouraged to participate in periodic community programming and dialogues intended to build community, promote learning, and support wellness centering the Black experience. Staff will organize opportunities for residents to attend Black-centered events and general university programs as a group. So they're segregating themselves. They're going to participate in, Black-centric community programs? Tell me, how do you promote learning when you segregate yourself? How do you promote and support wellness when you divest yourself from the people you say don't understand you? If you truly wanted to have a program where people would learn what it's like to grow up Black, you have to let non-Blacks participate. But what this is segregation. Plain and simple. Now, it may still be a voluntary segregation, but let me ask you, let's say a white student wants to learn what it's like to be to get a sense of the Black student experience. Let's say they want to. They understand they're not going to really get it because they're not Black. But let's say they want to get a sense of it. They want to learn what these people are talking about. Well, they certainly can't go to a Black affinity housing to find out. So how are they supposed to find out? See, I have a hard time believing that this is about getting rid of racism. All it seems to do is to promote racism, promote segregation, promote separation, promote misunderstanding, and sadly promote the idea that Blacks in this country just aren't as good as everyone else. They have to be set aside. They have to be pampered. They have to be treated differently simply because of the color of their skin. Not because of how they grew up, not because of their opportunities, but because of the color of their skin. That's racist. That's disgusting. And then there's another example. See, there's a UCLA accounting professor, a gentleman by the name of Gordon Klein, who was suspended in June of 2020. Now, what did this man do that was so egregious that he needed to be suspended? Well, he claims it is because he refused to grade black students more leniently than the rest of his class. And now he's suing the University of California system for damages. See, Klein described a culture among the professors in an interview. He said, professors are becoming more like robots. They avoid anything that might be that may be controversial or colorful or humorous. Anyone who goes anywhere near a controversial topic runs the risk of being canceled, being fired, being suspended. According to a post on the professor's Substack, a student approached him and asked to make the final exam a quote-unquote no-harm exam for black students. This is after George Floyd's death in June of 2020. Now, what that means is that the grade would only count if it helped the student. So he wanted black students graded differently than white students. If you got a good grade and you were a black student, it worked, it helped you, great. If you got a bad grade, well, it doesn't count. Now, Klein replied that, are there any students that may be of mixed parentage, such as half black, half Asian? What do you suggest I do with respect to them? A full concession or just half? Now, this led students to begin calling for the professor to be fired, and he was suspended and banned from campus because he refused to grade black students differently. Now, I don't know if this is a publicity stunt. I don't know if it's wokeism gone nuts. What this is racist. The UCLA apparently is racist because it turned around and said, how dare you not grade black students easier than white students or Asian students or anyone else? And as far as the question, how do you deal with someone who has mixed parentage? What if it's half black and half Asian, or half black and half white, or half black and half Native American? What do you do then? To me, that's a fair question. It shows the ludicrousy, the racism involved. And for that, he was suspended, and now he's suing. But here's what I want to know. How many parents are spending money at UCLA to have their children indoctrinated into such racist garbage? To be taught that they get special treatment if they're black, that if they don't get special treatment if they're black, all they have to do is throw a hissy fit and they'll get away with it. They can get a professor fired for not complying with the mob. What are we teaching these students? What are we teaching these students? And before I go, I want to throw a little twist in here. I saw this article and I had to go double check it. Now, for those of you who follow me on the Constitution study, I love to use Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary. Noah Webster was a contemporary of the Founding Fathers. He was asked to edit the Federalist Papers. To me, he's an excellent source for definitions around the founding era. And I've used his dictionary for years, which means I tend to use the more modern Merriam-Webster dictionary. But now I don't know if I can trust it anymore. So I had to go look. I saw this report. I had to go look and find out for myself. If you go to the Merriam-Webster dictionary and you look up the definition of anti-vaxxer, it's defined as a person who opposes the use of vaccines or regulations mandating vaccination. They changed it. See, I believe it used to just say a person who opposes the use of vaccines. If you oppose vaccines, you're an anti-vaxxer. Now, if you simply oppose regulations mandating vaccines, they call you an anti-vaxxer. See, it's one of the reasons why I go to the 1828 dictionary to get definitions, and occasionally some others around that time frame. But my go-to is Webster's 1828. Because we keep changing the definition of words. Now, what does this have to do with these indoctrination centers, this social engineering project in manipulating the mind of children? Because one of the ways we manipulate people is with the use of language. Nobody wants to be called an anti-something. People don't want to be called anti-Semites. They don't want to be called homophobic or transphobic. They don't want them. But we use these words as weapons. The term anti-vaxxer, while used as a pejorative, was at least fairly accurate when it meant someone who was against vaccines. Anti, against, vaxxer, vaccines. Makes sense. But now you have people who are not anti-vaccine. They just don't like that. They're opposed to vaccine mandates. And they get labeled an anti-vaxxer. See, it's one of the reasons, you know, people are always asking me to label myself. And I try to avoid labels because they're dangerous. Or they've become dangerous. Because when I think of an anti-vaxxer, when I use the original definition, someone who's opposed to vaccines. Nowadays, someone just says, oh, anti-vaxxer, you must be opposed to regulations. Well, yeah, you know what? I'm opposed to regulations mandating vaccines. They're a violation of the Constitution. They're a violation of your human rights. They're a violation of the very basics of freedom and liberty. But you see, now I can be dismissed easily as an anti-vaxxer. Kind of like a flat earther. This is what this social engineering project, this experiment of the public schools had brought us to. Now, even the language we use to communicate cannot be trusted because you have no idea which definition people are going to use. And if we cannot share a language, how can we communicate? How can we share ideas? How can we share concepts if we can't even share a language? Now you can find out more about my show and get all the latest podcasts if you go to AmericaOutloud.com. Under the menu, you'll find either our shows or schedule. You'll find the Constitution Study, and you'll be in the know.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.